It's the alignment series, and so we're going to talk about being a janitor. I don't know about you, but I have found that one of the people that I need the closest friendship with are people that are in the process of cleaning other people's messes up. Janitors do a good job of cleaning messes, other people's messes. And pretty soon, any organization won't be able to function if they don't have something or someone to do cleaning for them. Basically, if you operate this building and you try to operate it without any form of janitorial service or method of maintenance, we would end up having to shut the doors pretty quick. Even though and sometimes it's a very thankless job because we don't take time to say thank you. But the process of what I want to talk to you about in this series with being a janitor is something we all need to do. I was reading according to a 2006 study, this is on, you know, almost, well, it's over 10 years old now, and that is what's happening with our circle of friends is going down. Every one of us has a circle of friends, and according to this study back done 10, 11 years ago, it's dropping. The number of people who say they have no one to talk to about important matters has more than doubled back then, of 25%. 2012 New York Times article added that there's a scarcity of close friends has especially impacted midlifers. During midlife, it's harder to meet three conditions required for you to making new friends: proximity, repeated connections, and a setting that encourages people to let their guard down and confide in each other. The article went on to say that people who are in their 30s and 40s have plenty of people who enter their life through work, through children's play dates, and of course Facebook, but actual close friends, the kind you make in college, the kind you call in crisis, are in short supply. And as people approach their midlife, the days of youthful exploration and when life feels, you go on your blind dates, you are able to take steps in the unknown, those schedules start to compress when you get older. You don't have those certain things that you do that just for fun. You're trying to walk life out. And priorities change. People become pickier what they want in their friends. And no matter how many friends you make, in a sense, a fatalism can creep in and that you no longer have the BFF. This is ringing a bit. If you wouldn't mind just turning it down or take away the ring, that would be great. So, if that's the truth, if our circle of friends is getting smaller, the people we can confide in is becoming closer, wouldn't there be an inward struggle for ourselves to try to come to grips with that? Many of us want that breakthrough into our own lives of someone stepping in and bringing forth life into us when we are in a mess. And we are very receptive when we're younger to say, could you help me? But when we're older, it gets a little harder. And I guess I'm now talking on the other side of things. I think of myself being young, but I guess I'm in midlife, and so I'm not in my midlife crisis yet. I'm getting through it. But I think that if there is a societal change where there is a drawing of the circle that's getting smaller and smaller, the ability to go and reach into someone else's circle must be purely impossible. Not physically, but inwardly, we feel like, how can I really step into someone else's circle when my own circle is getting smaller? How do I really get to meet someone else or minister to them if my own life seems to be in a shambles? Yet we're all crying out for help with messes. Now, there's two types of messes in life, one that's internal and one that's external. And for today, I want to talk about the external messes. Now, sometimes the external messes happen to our life because there's inward messes already there. It's not a shock that sometimes your closest friends go through difficult circumstances and you're left going, how in the world did this happen? Because everything looked different. Everything seemed different. Because inward, there's a mess. There's things that haven't been dealt with. They haven't been repented of. They haven't walked life out. And so they tend to, finally, you can't keep those walls up forever. Some of it breaks out. But what do you do with the outward message once it's there? It's interesting that a lot of people sometimes become oblivious. There is a Nobel Prize winner psychologist, Daniel Kahneman. He recounts a story behind a famous experiment done at New York University. Participants in that experiment were led to individual booths, were invited to speak over an intercom about their personal lives and problems. They were to talk in turn for about 2 minutes. Only one microphone was active at any one time, and there were 6 participants in each group. And one of whom was a setup. This first person who set the thing up spoke first, following a script prepared by the experimenters, and he described his problems adjusting to New York and admitted that he was embarrassed and he was prone to seizures and when he was all stressed out. And so he began to say all those things out loud and everybody heard him, and everyone then went in turn. When the microphone again came over to the person who was the setup person again, he became agitated, incoherent, and he felt a seizure coming on and asked for someone to help. And his last words were, "Cuckoo, somebody," and he began, and there was choking sounds. "I'm going to die, I'm going to," and the seizure, and then he turns quiet. At this point, the microphone goes to the next participant and automatically became active. And nothing more was heard from the possibly dying individual. There have been interesting psychological experiments done with culture where when people are in trouble and have messes, we think we could do the work and step into the mess, but we don't. I'm on city council, and we spend a fair bit of time on emergency measures, and where we have all this stuff, and there's been quite a process in this city of volunteers helping with EMO, and you know, it's wonderful to have people that will want to involve themselves, and they prepare for that. But it's quite another thing when that exact situation takes place. What are you and I going to do? When somebody really needs our help, are we ready to step up and get involved in somebody else's mess? A janitor does that. A janitor comes along and, I don't know, back in my day when I went to school, they had a cart. Now some janitors are riding the cart. They can ride that thing and it looks like fun. Get out of my way, I'm cleaning the floor. I would have liked that to get to my class on time. But the thing is that a lot of times we really need to understand that we are in a generation where there is an assault. We live in a day and age where there is these two terms that are very much out in the open in life today. One is incarnate, the other is excarnate. Incarnate. Incarnate is the word that Jesus came and became man, dwelt as flesh among us. Excarnate is the opposite. It's not where God and man dwell together, it's separating that. A dualism, so to speak. Well, what am I really... I'll give you examples. Here's the incarnate on a TV show that many of you watch, and that is the Hidden Boss. Undercover Boss. Undercover Boss is an example of incarnate. The boss himself dresses up to become like his employees. So why? So he can find out what they're facing, how things are going on in his business. And what happens is some people get picked out that are terribly in financial or difficulty, and so he is able to rescue them and gives them these gifts of getting training, going back to school, buying a home, giving a car. It's cool. It is really cool. It gives me tears. Okay? I get to the end and go, wow, God showed up. Excarnate is shows like Hoarders. What am I trying to get at is hoarding. What we do with that is we spectate in someone else's problem. Right. And basically we make them an object. And basically we sit back and judge where they're going wrong, and yet we want to help. We think we can help them. We would like to help them. But we sit back and we spectate in someone else's problem, and we see all of the dysfunction, and we go and we think, oh, glad I don't have to do that. Do you see what's in all of those hoarder homes? Dead animals, feces, stuff. Oh. And we can sit back on our comfortable chair and go, oh man, life is rough for those people. But there's more of the issue of the hoarding in all of our, not the hoarding, but the hoarding example, than there is the undercover boss. We like to sit back and watch and objectify someone else's problems and circumstances. We like to think that we would do something about it, but when the rubber meets the road, we get paralyzed by someone else's mess. Janitors have a different way of looking at messes than everyone else does. Janitors, especially those who have given their careers to the profession, feel differently about cleaning up after people unless they resent their job. They've made peace with other people, with peace with messes. They understand that their role is to bring order into chaos, sanitation into the contaminated, and restoration to the wear and tear humans usually cause to their environment. Janitors have a deep insight about the human condition, that we are messy people. Right or wrong, good or bad, we humans tend to cause entropy. It isn't natural for a toddler to clean after himself. It doesn't feel natural for me to put my dirty dishes in the dishwasher. Although, when I do, I have to have it a certain way. I am the packer of the dishwasher. No one does it like me. It's true. It's true. You go to my house, I'll redo the dishwasher. So my wife just ends up just throwing everything in, and then I go back and sort it. Now, that's funny because I'm not a very organized person, but I like my dishwasher to be organized. I don't know, it's just the pack rat in me. I grew up in the land of where my dad packed the car when we went on vacation, and he rejoiced at how much he could pack in a little VW Bug, and us three kids could still lay in the back seat. Now, I'll tell you, that takes good packing. A VW Bug, three kids, no dog at that point, but we were able to survive a trip all the way to Disneyland and back. I've kind of inherited that fact. When my wife would just bring the suitcases to the door, and she'd wait, and I would go and take all the suitcases to the car and pack them. Connor one time said to his mom, he said, "Mom, when I get married, I want a woman that packs." Okay, I won't go any further with that story. Although it would be better if people picked up after themselves perfectly, we make allowances. We hire brave, humble souls to do dirty work. We call them janitors, custodians, and we don't think too highly of their role. It has to do with our own disgust in creating mess in the first place. But in the kingdom of God, the least has become the greatest. In the kingdom of God, the one who does the job no one wants receives the highest honor. And we, as the people of God, could learn a thing or two from janitors. Their role in our workplace mirrors our spiritual role to the world. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 8 says, "Above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins." Or in the Message, it says, "Everything in the world is about to be wrapped up, so take nothing for granted. Stay wide awake in prayer. Most of us love each other as if our life depended on it. Love makes up for practically anything. Be quick to give a meal to the hungry, a bed to the homeless cheerfully. Be generous with different things God gave you, passing them around so all can get in on it. If words, let it be God's words. If help, let it be God's hearty help. That way, God's bright presence will be evident in everything through Jesus. And He'll get all the credit as the one mighty in everything, on course to the end of time." Oh, yes! We, as the people of God, says right there, are called to clean up messes we didn't make. We do this so Jesus gets the glory. Isaiah 61, and I will go back to this next week when I deal with the inward messages, but "the Spirit of the Lord is upon me," Jesus said, It's found in Isaiah. He said, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor, he has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to give them a bountiful headdress instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the garment of praise instead of a faint spirit, that they may be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. In order to bind up the brokenhearted and to give a headdress of honor to those who lost everything, we have to be able to anoint others with gladness when they have no reason and they are in mourning. We have to clothe people with thanksgiving when they feel weak and discouraged. It means we get to walk into other people's messes. Now, I'm going to read these next few verses, but I want you to read them, I want you to hear them in the context of conflict. Here's the first one. Matthew 5:9. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. In order to create peace, we have to stop avoiding conflict. Philippians 2:4. Do not merely look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Here's the point. In order to care for others, we will have to sacrifice our own self-interest. I know it's going to get quiet in here, but that's okay, because I'm okay with quiet. If you fall asleep, however, Frank, I'll make you pray. I had to do that because I got to get back at Frank somehow. Okay. Now, it's not very glamorous when you and I are compelled and out of the love of Christ as he has loved us. It's not very glamorous of us to be able to walk into other people's messes. It often comes without honor or acclaim. When we stop avoiding conflicts and realize we're called into them, when we don't care about who gets the credit, we walk into messes out of the deep and abiding love for Jesus. Luke 17:10 says in the Message, does the servant get special thanks for doing what's expected of him? It's the same with you. When you've done everything expected of you, be a matter of fact and say, the work is done. What were we told to do? We did. Most Christians believe in serving. It's kind of hard to follow Jesus and disagree with him on that topic. But most Christians don't recognize their opportunities to serve. Those who have received Jesus have been filled with his nature, which means it's natural for us to serve. Now, I'm going to just go on a little rabbit trail and hopefully stop myself really quick because I could go down here. But there is this thing in Christendom that says, my gift is not to serve. We go through the list of giftings and I'm not a server, so that I leave that to the servers. I want to shoot that thing till the cows come home, because basically there is innate in all of us to serve. Jesus was a servant when he took off his outer garment and washed his disciples' feet. He didn't go to the disciples and say, well, wait a minute, this isn't my gifting, it's one of you guys. So get up here and wash my feet. No, he did it. Why? Because because he was setting a precedence, and he was saying that to be great, you have to be a servant of all. And sometimes we forget. We miss the chance to do the greatest good because we don't see how our calling comes in the form of conflict. Ouch. Opportunity is missed by most people because it dresses in overalls and looks like work. Thomas Edison said that. In order to be aligned with the purposes of God, we need to be mature enough to recognize our moment. And our moment often looks like a mess. First Corinthians chapter 2, verses 6 to 16, and I'll just read a bit here. Yet among the mature we do impart wisdom, though it is not wisdom of this age or of the rulers of this age who are doomed to pass away, but we impart a secret and hidden wisdom of God, which God decreed before the ages for our glory. None of the rulers of this age understood this, for if they had, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But as it is written, no eye has seen nor ear heard what the heart of man imagined, what God has prepared for those who love him. These things God has revealed to us through his Spirit. Okay, God's way of seeing and God's logic are sometimes counterintuitive to the human experience. God rescued us through his Son using his own wisdom. Yet nobody saw it. Nobody recognized it. Or could even imagine the way that God would even work. Instead of swooping in on a horse, he rode a mule. Instead of killing his enemies, he forgave them and died at their hands. Instead of triumphing in life, Jesus triumphed over death. God's intuitive wisdom always invites us to go low and step into a mess. We often quote the verse, no eye has seen, nor ears heard, the heart of man imagined what God has prepared for those who love him. We kind of use it in a positive sense. We say, well, you know what? It's okay. You know, God's going to come through. It's going to be glorious. But I guess what I want to say to you is, if we did quote that way to Jesus, I'm not sure he would have taken it that way. We sometimes use things to bless us when really Jesus is saying something is being said, something else. Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, if you were to say that to him, we can't run from the conflict. We're called to be incarnate in those conflicts. You see, what was described there is no eye has seen, because guess what, folks? It was a mess when Jesus died. As a Christian, we need to come to terms with the fact that you love and serve people by cleaning up messes you didn't create. I remember in my first church, I was senior pastor, and I had to go to someone's home late at night. The police were just leaving. And it was a family conflict. Mom and dad were at each other. I don't know. I'm glad that sometimes I was ignorant of anything. I just kind of went in blind. Because in those messes, they're the accumulation of everything that's in messy in two different people, and it blows up. Try to be a janitor in that mess. Now, if I would have known then what I know now, okay, I could have handled that a little differently. But what I did was end up spending almost half the night trying to counsel one and then counsel the other, and hopefully that they could live in the same house without calling the police one more time. It's not pretty. But I guess what I want to say is that if there are no messes that you know of around you, you're blind. The people you and I deal with each and every moment of our lives, that we work with, that we associate with, that live on the same block as us, are have messes. And they're in big trouble. And guess what? It doesn't always, it's not always conducive to phone the pastor and say, could I set up an appointment for my neighbor down the street? The police were just there, and guess what? They need you, Pastor. Yeah, they need somebody, all right. But here's where the mess and relationship play a part, is you can't have authority in someone else's mess unless they let you. That's why when someone's calling me right now, Kendall, you got to go over there. You got to help that person. Oftentimes, if you would say that to me, I will look at you in kind of in bewilderment of what how to answer you carefully. Because guess what? The point is that I don't want, is not that I don't want to help. It's the place that relationship is. And I do not have the relationship capital to deal with that mess. Because they don't know me. People, you don't understand, sometimes people treat pastors with kid gloves. They don't know how to treat me. Mark's laughing because he knows, because people don't know, really, they can't really act themselves with you, okay? But they don't really, they feel uncomfortable where they think you are. I was at a wedding yesterday, and I was doing a wedding, and basically, I was invited to a wedding that I don't know anybody. Try that on for size. And I'm waiting for the bride and groom to sign the papers and stuff, and I found the coolest place to be, and that is in front of the air conditioner. And, you know, the bride and groom finally come in, and we sign the papers after we've done the ceremony, and they're apologetic. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot, you know. But really, you see, the point is what I was there to do, I was trying to serve them. But I really had no authority because there was no relationship. I was doing a service, a government thing to do, helping someone do their thing, but there was, it's all about the serving industry. It's about, I'm doing you a service so you can get what you want. But in order to clean up a mess, it has to go beyond just something that you do for employment. You see, if you talk to most janitors that are around, if they don't know the people who they're cleaning up for, it becomes a very monotonous job. Right, Brenda? You have to understand that there are people in which you are dealing with. And I want to wind this up because Pastor Mark's here, Father Mark, and I don't want to give him any more fodder. But you see, the Spirit searches everything, even the depths of God. For who knows a person's thought except the Spirit of the of that person which is in him. It's also no one comprehends the thoughts of God except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit of who from God, that we might understand the things freely given us by God. We impart this in words not taught by human wisdom, but taught by the Spirit, interpreting spiritual truths to those who are spiritual. The natural person does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are folly to him, and he will not be able to understand them because they are spiritually discerned. The spiritual person judges all things, but is himself to be judged by no one, for no one has understood the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him. Basically, what is that saying? I want to give you the capacity to understand that you have the ability to step into someone else's mess out of relationship with authority, because you have the mind of Christ. The whole setup to that is, it's very, who has the mind of the Lord? No one has except through the Spirit. And because you and I have been born of the Spirit, we have the mind of Christ. We have the ability to clean up people's messes. However, if you avoid conflicts, messes, and painful situations, you will also ignore God's potential solution flowing through you. What funeral did Jesus not interrupt? What sickness did he not heal? What dysfunction did he not confront? What city did he not offer hope and peace to? Remember, as he is, so are we in this world. So that's the heart of alignment. We are to bring Christ to a world around us. Not a Superman. You don't have to work harder on other people's messes than they're willing to work on their own. You'll find that that was very frustrating. Try to work on someone else's problem when they don't see the same problem. I've been there, done that, worn the t-shirt. Jesus often asked people what they wanted. So when you're in the situation, you see the mess, and someone is reaching out for help, the first question to ask is, what do you want? Luke 18:41 says, "What do you want me to do for you?" he said. Blind person said, "Lord, let me recover my sight." The testimony of Jesus permits you to have healthy boundaries in your sphere of influence. You aren't called to do everything, but you aren't permitted to do nothing. Did you hear me? You aren't called to do everything, but you aren't permitted to do nothing. Amen. You are a fountain of God's heavenly wisdom. You are a conduit of his thoughts to counteract messes and bring solutions. You're not a problem solver on a dimension other people haven't even dreamed of. Sorry, you are a problem solver other people haven't dreamed of, and you can clean up the messes that other people have just settled with. So let me land this plane. What does this have to do with here and now? Plenty. Plenty. We live in a day and age where everything seems to be in chaos. It's like everything's thrown up and we're not sure where it's all going to land. But the place where God has, or the place where he has you, is the world that you have the most influence in. You are the janitor he's called to rectify and to clean up the situations that other people have caused turmoil in. Gone are the days where, I guess, let me back this up and say, if you think your life is hunky-dory and altogether, I'll just wait a few minutes. But it's the same with the people that are around you. Stop, take a look, and understand. And walk into that mess knowing that you have the ability to bring healing to it. You know, a lot of times when we, and I'll close with this with reference to the there's a famous story that Jesus gives, and that's of the Good Samaritan. And you know, it's the rich ruler who Jesus is trying to confront about who is the neighbor. Remember, the person is totally assaulted on the road, and a priest, no offense, a priest walks on the other side of the person who's bleeding, dying. A Levite walks on the other side, and it's the Good Samaritan who's the neighbor. Now, we all know that the Samaritans and Jews were not very friendly to one another, and they looked down. But I like what N.T. Wright says. He says, when he talks about the end of the story, he says this: what is at stake then and now is the question of whether we use the God-given revelation of love and grace as a way of boosting our own sense of isolated security and purity, or whether we will see it as a call and a challenge to extend that love and grace to the whole world. No church, no Christian can remain content with easy definitions which allow us to watch most of the world lying half dead on the road. Yikes. We don't really have the opportunity to say no. Really, God's calling us to say yes. Be the Samaritan, the neighbor, the janitor, because he will give you the ability to see it through and to bring healing. Wait, I will be bad if I ended on that note and said, but what about my own messes of my own life? Doesn't that take me out of the running to help someone else? Wrong. You see, sometimes, just sometimes, if you are the conduit that God is using to reveal His glory and to bring His glory, when you become the conduit of that glory, what's happening to you is closer to Him and can be healed when you're not thinking about yourself and your own problems and shedding His love to someone who needs it the most. He will deal with you and your situation and bring healing to it. But the focus has to be off of me, onto Him, and what he's called me to do.